Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
The Crown Court of Roana Murphy has reversed a decision not to allow Mary Lou MacDonald, the leader of Sinn Féin, time to speak following the nomination of Taoiseach. In a statement in the last few minutes, Roana Murphy has said that she noticed the precedent whereby Mary Lou MacDonald spoke in 2020 following her nomination for the position of Taoiseach, and has agreed, Roana Murphy has agreed, that the same time will be allowed to the leader of Sinn Féin today. And earlier this morning, you might have heard Piers Doherty from Sinn Féin on Morning Ireland saying that it was unprecedented that a nominee for Taoiseach wouldn't be allowed to speak in the Dáil. He said nominees for Taoiseach always had the right to speak in this section. He claimed the only reason that this has happened is to exclude Mary Lou. So that decision in the last couple of minutes has been reversed. Now, the US government has recently imposed sanctions on the head of Sudan's army and de facto president, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan. He's been leading one of the two sides in the 21-month-long civil war that has seen tens of thousands killed, uprooted over 12 million people and pushed parts of Sudan into famine. Now, US officials say Sudan's military has used chemical weapons on at least two occasions, sparking fears they could soon be used in more densely populated areas. And while the wars in Ukraine and Gaza have dominated the world's attention, has this catastrophic conflict and humanitarian crisis been largely ignored? Well, Declan Walsh is Chief Africa Correspondent with the New York Times, and Declan is on the line now. Good morning, Declan.
Good morning.
You've been writing about this for the New York Times, specifically this issue around the use of chemical weapons. What did the US officials say about the use of those weapons in Sudan?
They say that Sudan's military has used chemical weapons at least twice in the last 4 months against the RSF. That's the paramilitary group that's been fighting for control of the country for almost the last 2 years. They say that these instances of chemical weapons use occurred in relatively remote parts of the country, which accounts partly perhaps for why they haven't become public before this. But they said that they did fear that the weapons would be used in more densely populated parts of the capital, Khartoum, where the two sides have been battling for supremacy since the start of the war.
And do you have any more information on what the chemical weapons that were used were?
They said that the weapons appeared to be based on chlorine, which is a weapon that was first weaponized in World War One. It has turned up in Iraq and in Syria, and notably has also a history of being used by the Sudanese armed forces in the past during the conflict in Darfur about 10 years ago.
And it's a hugely damaging weapon, isn't it, chlorine gas? Remind us what it does.
It attacks the nervous system, and it attacks the tissues of the victims who are hit by them. When there was a previous instance of alleged chemical weapons use by the military in 2016, Amnesty International published photographs of children who'd been affected by them, covered in lesions and blisters, some of them vomiting blood or even unable to breathe.
Mm-hmm. So the US officials then, who are monitoring this, they do have a fear, as you say, that this now could be used in more heavily populated areas, and that civilians will be the victims, of course.
That's right. Yeah, this is just another twist in this war that's had so many atrocities on both sides, but until now, no reports of chemical weapons.
Now, there have been sanctions taken against Sudan. How much of a driving factor were the use of weapons or the suspected use of chemical weapons in that decision?
It was a very important factor, as I understand it, even though in the official notice that targeted not just the Sudanese military, but the head of the Sudanese military. The Americans and others have imposed sanctions on both sides in the war pretty much since the fighting started. But notably, in the last number of weeks, they've imposed sanctions both on the head of the Sudanese military and on the head of the RSF, who they've accused of genocide. And that's really the significance of this round of sanctions. They say that that they have evidence that the use of the chemical weapons had been sanctioned by the head of the military, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, who's the head of the military and also seen by many as the de facto head of Sudan's government in this war.
I suppose it just gives us a very strong indication as to how severe this is. One side accused of using chemical weapons, the other of committing genocide.
Yeah, I mean, there have been reports of strong accusations of atrocities by both sides. The other side, the Rapid Support Forces, have been accused of ethnic cleansing, particularly in the Darfur region of the country. And that's what led to that genocide determination a couple of weeks ago. The Sudanese military had been accused of war crimes largely for indiscriminate bombing of civilians. There's been a whole series of incidents in which bombs have landed on busy marketplaces, often targeting their opponents, but very crudely also killing sometimes dozens of civilians at once. But the use of chemical weapons seems to cross another red line.
And before the sanctions, there were suggestions that the military in Sudan were finally gaining momentum. They were seen to be losing up to very recently. Where is the conflict at right now?
They have been gaining in the last number of months. The momentum has shifted, sometimes dramatically, during the course of the war. A year ago, it looked like the RSF were sweeping across the country, capturing one area after another. But in the last number of months, the army have pushed back hard. They recently pushed the RSF out of this town called Wad Medeni, which is just south of Khartoum. It's in the center of Sudan's breadbasket area, and it's considered strategically and symbolically very important. So they certainly have the wind behind them at the moment. They say that they're in a position to win this war militarily. But most experts believe that because of the scale of the war, because so many outside countries are involved, because just simply of the size of Sudan, neither side is really in a position to win a military victory at this point.
Is aid getting in?
It is, more aid is getting in than before, but it's still far from adequate. In fact, the famine that was started or was officially classified last summer is now spreading across the country at considerable speed. There was notice just before December from the body that certifies hunger that it had spread to 5 districts. It's expected to reach another 5 districts soon, and they worry that about another 17 will be affected in the coming months. So you see that as this war is really stepping up, as the fighting's getting more serious, the humanitarian situation is also getting far more serious, and this famine is turning into probably one of the largest famines the world has seen in many, many years.
And we spoke before about this, you know, how it is seen as being largely ignored. The world is distracted by what's happening in Gaza, the situation in Ukraine. Is that sense amongst the Sudanese still the case, that they feel nobody is intervening here to help?
That's right. And now there's a new sense of uncertainty about what's going to happen with the role of the Americans. There's been some criticism, it has to be said, of the US for waiting so long to level sanctions against the leaders of both of these groups. It happened just in the dying weeks of the Biden administration. And now with the arrival of President Trump, there's a great deal of uncertainty about whether he's going to put any resources at all into a crisis like Sudan. He's, of course, famously made derogatory comments about African countries during his last term in office, and he's already gave some indications, or his officials have given indications, that they do not see foreign aid as a major part of American policy. Mm-hmm. So even on the front of diplomatic hopes, they are very curtailed at the moment.
As you've alluded to there, we can judge Donald Trump on his record and his involvement during his first term in Africa. How would you characterize it?
Well, it was very transactional. It has to be said that Sudan was one of the few parts of the continent where he actually did something, but again, on that transactional basis. Sudan had been on this list of state sponsors of terrorism for many decades, and then he agreed to effectively take Sudan off that list, but only in exchange for recognizing Israel as part of the Abraham Accords. So there is those who have some hope for the Trump administration, feel that perhaps there is a way to appeal to his transactional sensibilities by perhaps suggesting that, you know, maybe if he were to help to broker a quick ceasefire in Sudan, there could be some personal glory from him. But on the other hand, he's very influenced by his allies, and one of the biggest influences in Sudan's war is the United Arab Emirates, which has been staunchly backing the rapid support forces. The last time he was in power, President Trump gave a lot of latitude to the UAE to expand in this part of the world. Mm-hmm. And there's a fear that that policy could come back this time.
Declan Walsh, Chief Africa Correspondent with the New York Times, thank you very much for being with us on the programme.